Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Three Martini Lunch for Thursday. And Jim, with all the different things going up on Capitol Hill, there are mostly issues that we've dealt with a lot this week. But one that needs to be dealt with pretty soon by the Republican Party is the selection of the new chair. And it's in kind of an awkward election because obviously Republicans did extremely well. Yet when you look at Michael Steele, what is he best known for, even though he's not directly responsible, is the huge tab at the L.A. strip club and a bunch of different gaffes, whether it's GQ and some other things along the way. So do you go with results or do you go with people that the party's really
going
to like?
They definitely aren't going with Steele. That much is fairly clear. I was at the first debate they held yesterday, sponsored by the good folks at FreedomWorks. No punches thrown, no chairs thrown, no brawls or anything, but Michael Steele was not there. His name was only mentioned twice, but his record was thrashed six ways to Sunday by the folks who were there. Ann Wagner, Gentry Collins, Saul Anousis, and Mike Duncan, who was RNC chair from January 07 to 09. It's kind of this bizarre circumstance. The Republicans had this fantastic year, and yet when you thought of the RNC this cycle, probably most people's minds jump to Lesbian Bondage Club. And it's not just because their minds automatically always jump to Lesbian Bondage Club. It's just that if this is like a one-off problem scandal, that would have been, one thing. But it was an awful fundraising cycle. They're going to announce today that the RNC is $15 million in debt at a time when every other committee was having at least a fairly decent year, and in some cases a very good year. You know, Steele's mouth got him in trouble more than a few times, and there was just this general sense of drift. And if there's something that had me fairly optimistic about the event yesterday is that of the four who were there, and there are a few folks who are expected to be interested in running who didn't show up yesterday, none of them seemed to be interested in using the RNC chair as a stepping stone to anything else. There were no aspiring governors on stage. There were no aspiring senators or anybody else. They just wanted to be good national committee managers. And they kind of recognize that the job is not just a talking head. A lot of it is day to day. The constant phrase I heard was, making the trains run on time. So based on that, you either needed Mussolini or some experience with Amtrak, I believe.
Well, as you look at this crop, I think a lot of folks would probably be a little bit reluctant to go with Duncan, regardless of whether or not the previous couple of cycles were his fault or not. But Saul Anousis, I believe, ran against Steele and ended up being one of the top two or three before being voted down in favor of Steele. So is there a consensus at all who people seem to like?
This is an election of only 168 RNC members. Have a say in this. So if you're looking at this and you're trying to say, who do I like? It doesn't really matter who you like unless you're one of the 168 RNC members. And if you're listening, good. If you're not listening, they should be. But just observing that yesterday kind of can be seen as a dress rehearsal for another debate that will be held before the Americans for Tax Reform closer to the election date in January of next year. All of them emphasize a lot of the same points, and all of them had at least some sort of record they could point to of saying, Ann Wagner was saying, look what I did with the Missouri GOP. One of the guys who's rumored to be interested is Reince Priebus. I'm probably mangling his name, but he's the chairman of the Wisconsin State GOP. Great turnaround there for that state party. Probably somebody who might be the odd man out in that category is Saul Anousis, who I would notice widely liked and widely regarded as a guy who's a real tech head, one of the first guys to really get onto Twitter and recognize the usefulness of that as a communications tool. But when he was running the state party back in getting into the 06, 08 cycle, they just didn't have many success stories.
That's
and you
true.
Can say it wasn't necessarily his fault, but it'd be nice to be able to say, look what I did here and think about what I could do at the national level. That's kind of what everybody else was using as their pitch. So that might be a factor. But in the end, this probably is going to come down to the personal relationships and personal schmoozing that goes on amongst those 168 members in the next month.
Let's move on to martini number two now, the bad martini. And if there's any lesson from the Obama administration so far, do not have the Obama administration try to win the United States the rights to host any major sporting event. We saw what happened when President Obama made an unprecedented effort to try and get the 2016 Summer Olympics in Chicago. Now Eric Holder was over in Zurich, and why they picked Holder to pitch for the 2022 World Cup, I have yet to know. I guess he was probably over there personally hunting for Julian Assange. But
if he pulls him back, that makes the whole trip worthwhile.
Then
people like me stop complaining. Now, I was flipping through the channels relatively late last night, and they have this channel called Euronews, which gives you kind of European news in English language And I'm, you know, why the big story was the pitch to host the World Cup. It's a very big deal over in Europe. It's this beautiful, it's up in Zurich. You see people coming up to this building with the Alps in the background. Light snow is falling. And I see Eric Holder getting out of a big black SUV. And I'm like, wait, what is he doing there? And I dug into this and found out that indeed he was there to demonstrate that the U.S., I guess, had to secure facilities and that there would be no legal issues with hosting the World Cup. I didn't realize somebody could sue you for hosting, but apparently that's the concern there. And Eric Holder has nothing. At first I was griping, oh, he just wanted a free trip to Zurich to, you know, spend the holidays time around there. No, Obama sent him for this specific mission, which I find endlessly reassuring, Greg, the idea that this is, you know, this is the first preeminent item on the AG's plate at this moment. There's nothing else going on with security issues or law enforcement or anything like that. It's not like somebody's trying to blow up Christmas trees in Portland or anything like that. But now we find out just, you know, not too long ago that, despite the fantastic sales pitch of Eric Holder and Bill Clinton and Morgan Freeman stoically narrating our bid, I'm sure.
Sure.
We lost both 2018 and 2022 to the honest integrity of the bid from Russia and the cool temperate temperatures of Qatar in the Middle East, where the average summer temperature is 104 degrees Fahrenheit. So, look, I'm a very modest soccer fan. I tune into the World Cup when the U.S. is playing once every 4 years. This is by no means the biggest problem on the Obama administration's plate right now. But I'm kind of left with this point of, wait, I thought the world was supposed to love us by now. We have a president who literally bows to foreign leaders to make everybody feel better about themselves. And we still can't beat out places that are places like Rio de Janeiro other countries that have, from where I sit, glaring problems with their hosting abilities.
Well,
I think this is kind of just observing that, stop bowing. Well, if you're not going to give us the World Cup, then we're not bowing to you anymore, by golly.
Let's move on to the third and final martini now. And the liberals all bent out of shape, Jim, because the National Portrait Gallery, which is a branch of the Smithsonian Institute here in Washington, has given in to the demands that a very offensive display, which involves a video of Christ covered in ants and then homoerotic images. Shockingly, people were offended by that, despite what many of the liberal activists would like us to believe. And some believe that this would actually be a sign that the arts community understands that conservatives are actually serious about calling it quits on paying taxpayer dollars for some of these things. I personally would not only defund the NEA, but ask them for a refund for all previous years. So this is hopefully a good sign down the road that people are going to be at least mildly responsible if they want any sort of taxpayer support.
You know, this stems from the National Portrait Gallery, a provocative, is their word for it, piece of video art that depicts ants going onto Christ. And as a result of this, there's a big story in the Washington Post today with my congressman, Jim Moran, lamenting that this is going to, just add fodder to a push by Republicans to defund the NEA, the NEH, and anything else that funds art. Now, besides the fact of this, of the Serrano piss Christ photo, et cetera, my understanding, and I have to go back and double check this, Greg, but my understanding was the National Endowment for the Arts does not consider cartooning to be a form of art that they will fund. The work of Charles M. Schulz, the work of Dick Tracy, the work of all of these illustrators who worked over the years, that does not fit their definition of art. And this gets to the very fundamental problem of the National Endowment for the Arts. At some point, somebody in the federal government has to say, this is art, this is not. And obviously, it's always going to end up with, it's always going to be a judgment call. It's always going to come down to aesthetics. But to me, when Ants on Christ is considered art, but anything from Peanuts to the work of Bill Watterson in Calvin and Hobbes or any of this stuff is not considered art. To me, it's just gotten too arbitrary to justify to the public any longer. And when you see this kind of stuff, you think they'd kind of have the sense to recognize that there are a bunch of Christians who pay taxes in doing this, and they're going to be pretty PO'd. Now, here's the thing. If there had been ants on the Quran or ants on Muhammad depiction, one, they'd shut it down a heck of a lot quicker.
Sure.
And two, there's we all suspect that there's this very different standard applied, that because you don't see Christian suicide bombers, the NEA or various organizations are willing to withstand public scrutiny a little bit longer than they might for other faiths.
Certainly true. So it's very interesting to see that they did actually give in on that after all the huge protest, and rightly so. Jim, fascinating day. Some different topics today. We'll certainly be back tomorrow.
It's what happens when campaigns slow down, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.